A community that knows itself takes care of itself. The stories of those who live in the Matsu Borough are as varied as the people themselves. Some you have heard. Some, perhaps, you have not. This is Voices of the Matsu, bringing our stories to life.
Hi there. I'm Emily Forstner, your host today with Voices of the Matsu. Listeners should be aware that today's story acknowledges the use and existence of drugs and crime. Throughout Voices of the Matsu, we talk a lot about community, the what's, the where's, the who's and why's of those smaller groups found within a community. And today we connect with another, those who re-enter from prison back into the community, the ones working for a second chance.
It's very a hopeless place sometimes. And what makes sense there doesn't make sense outside of there. There's a whole subculture there of, you know, we need to think this way, we need to live this way. It would only make sense there, outside of prison. You would just come right back to prison if you were to try to thrive to live in what is the most popular thing in prison, right?
We call this episode Second Chance, and we get to know a man named David Anderson, released from prison just 5 months ago.
I want your audience to know that this story of mine it was born and raised right out of Alaska. And so my story was molded in community, our home. Me leading up to prison, there was already a downward spiral starting to develop in my life that was rooted in a lot of pain, a lot of trauma, and just a lot of disconnect with community. A lack of it, if you will.
It's a story that follows the familiar arc of a hero's journey. That journey from the known to the unknown and back again as a changed person. This story's hero returns to society as a convicted felon. A man who found purpose and peace with God. And with the help of a program called Second Chance, he's doing just that. Grabbing a second lease on life after serving more than half of his life behind bars.
I ended up, found myself sitting in a prison, a jail actually, I wasn't even at prison yet, looking at some serious prison time, a good portion of my life. I was more living in this place of a victim mentality and like, oh, look what everything that has happened to me, you know, look what everybody has done, and now here I am and it don't get much worse than this.
I first meet David Anderson at his apartment in Wasilla. He looks like the guy next door. A young beard, black-rimmed glasses, new haircut, easy smile.
I'm a 40-year-old man, and as you can see, we're sitting here in an efficiency or studio apartment, and I'm surrounded with very little, but I'm at peace and content.
Everything in the apartment is arranged neatly, in a row, next to the far wall. There's a bed, then a small recliner, and an end table covered with a tablecloth that sits next to a small desk with a chair. Above that, a framed poster of the 8 Beatitudes hangs on the wall.
But that doesn't take away from the fact that my life is, to a certain degree, just beginning, this chapter, if you will.
When you get to know David's story, you might imagine the story actually starting in a small efficiency, just like this one.
And I was born to a teenage mother when she was 15, and you know, it was a lot for her to be able to raise me.
Imagine, if you will, for a moment, a smiling face in a school picture, a kindergartner with a toothless grin and freshly combed hair.
So by 5, I was living with my grandma. And with my grandma, it was probably a lot for her to take me on and another one of my little brothers. And
this home proved to be abusive. Children's Services was a frequent visitor. And grandma, she would drop David off at a behavior treatment center as if it were a babysitter.
Like, oh, how do I see myself as this damaged and broken kid in these behavior management hospitals? When I leave, I have to go back and mingle with the kids in public school.
It's a stark comparison to the other smiling children who have their photos on refrigerators.
So they're not really seeing the full picture, and I'm just being groomed into seeing myself as a bad person, a bad kid.
By 13, David lives in a group foster home in Anchorage, and that's where your caring adult works in 12-hour shifts, while everyone around you is just waiting for a family. At 15, he is placed with stable foster guardians until he turns 18 and ages out.
And in fact, that to this day, that foster guardian is been there for me, and, you know, talks to me and helps me out when they can.
So the little boy in the picture grows up, and all he wants is to have people want to be around him. He's like anyone else, just looking for a community. David has a name for how he tried to find those connections.
A performance on, hey, what can I do to make this person want to be around me? From just relationships with people and how to interact, how to build just a normal relationship that didn't exist for me. Very few friends and so on and so forth. So you're alone, you know?
He even tries being a stand-up comic, thinking that maybe laughter would heal his hurt. But the truth is that being funny on cue is lonely.
I was very brave, but maybe not the smartest.
So he tries another way.
Well, maybe if I smoke pot, I can be more artistically creative. In my mind, I'm not going to buy a bunch of pot every time I needed a marijuana. I was like, you know, I might as well just start growing it so I have it at hand all the time. So that turns into now I'm a guy that's growing pot. And this is back when it was illegal. And I'm brushing shoulders with a lot of other guys that are doing the same thing.
So now he not only has a lot of friends, he has a source of income. That's two birds with one stone.
And now I'm developing these relationships, though, that are more built in, a party or sometimes criminal agendas, how to sell more pot.
He's got friends now, and it's fun. Until it isn't.
I end up committing a crime, you know, trying to help one of my friends out, and things just became way more serious in terms of the aftermath of what took place.
David is sentenced to 30 years in prison. He begins with a 2-year stint at Cook Inlet Jail before being transferred at one time or another through 7 of Alaska's prisons.
And the longer you're in there, the more alone you are. You wake up every morning and it's just the unspoken word about your identity, who you are. You are a convicted felon. You're facing the music for the choices that you've made, and you're reminded every day that you're not a safe person to be around. You're behind barbed wire fences. You can't mingle with society. So why would I think that society would want to mingle with me or talk to me?
But remember, this story follows a hero's journey, so there is a turning point of purpose. There's a moment of clarity, if you will, that rocky transition of understanding. David's in prison nearly a decade before his turning point of feeling belonging and purpose.
But ultimately, we're supposed to be engaged with other people, you know, participating in what I refer to as Christ-centered relationships. I would also refer to them as recovery-centered relationships. These relationships are how you are able to be edified and encouraged and find hope and peace and connection. Perspective was given to me, pretty much changed my life, and it made me realize, oh, that makes complete sense. Never heard that one before. And what do I do now?
The struggling hero always has a mentor. Think Bilbo and Gandalf, Harry and Dumbledore, Simba and Rafiki. For David, in prison, it's Chaplain Paul.
The guy that I think initially gave me this teaching, this perspective, was a guy named Chaplain Paul Schindler. And he was also the guy that baptized me, was that which is the launching point of my spiritual journey.
Don't be mistaken, though. Even if you have found your faith and purpose, nothing comes easy in prison, especially when 60% of all prisoners in Alaska suffer from some sort of mental illness or condition.
You know, you have to remember, as of right now, especially here in Alaska, the prison system is filled with people that are mentally ill. It's just as much as a mental hospital as it is a place for, it's a place for correction. But truth is, there's not that much correction. It's more a place of existing. And so you're existing amongst a bunch of people that are hurt, damaged, and mentally ill. And some people are there forever. But people did make decisions to be there. I made a decision to be there. I belonged in prison for what I had done. I made a choice, and the Lord reached me, and I had made changes in my life.
There is no way to extract David's faith from his story of reentry into society. He wants me to listen to a song. He takes out his phone and presses play.
Now, this lady's speaking my heart. It's hard. It hurts. And I felt like giving up numerous times, not since I've been released, but especially when I was incarcerated.
David's listening to Out of the Woods by Chrissy Nordoff in the Halls.
Don't give up. You gotta trust. And that key, that word there that's key for me is trust. Because I come from a background where I couldn't trust anybody. You know, especially incarcerated, you don't trust anybody. You can't. And so...
it's like his theme song.
How do I discern who I can trust? To this day, that's an assessment I still make. Right here. And he says, the Lord is singing over us. I'm going to pause that. I'm just going to stop it there. Seeing the big picture. And so for me, when I'm listening to this song, right now I'm in obedience. I'm in obedience to my parole and probation conditions. I'm in obedience to what I'm trying to do in terms of how I think God would want me to live a life. Because I believe it's only because of him that I'm even out. That's the thing. I found purpose in my identity as a believer in Jesus Christ, as my Lord and Savior. And I look to what Jesus's character, Jesus's moral value system would resemble in my life, in my heart. In fact, I believe that my moral value system is rooted there. And so my purpose is to continue to be Christ-like, continue to be a man of integrity, a man of Christian values, and a man that's going to be living in discernment.
With purpose in mind, David goes to earn 15 college credits while in prison. He gains esteem and confidence with each credit. With the increased confidence, he now works to be accepted for a transfer to the Point McKenzie Correctional Farm.
I think it was the best for the mind, the soul, if you will, because there's no fences there. The fences, those barbed wire fences, that's an assault to your identity. At least for me, it was. You know, hey, I'm that dangerous. I'm that scary. And so, and once I was in that farm place, it made me feel like, okay, I'm slowly but surely starting to regain trust with, at least within Department of Corrections, and maybe one day in the community.
David has a mission now, and he starts to prepare for reentry long before he's released.
They had a dump truck out there at the farm, and a friend of mine went through a truck driving school, and so I had the truck driving textbook sent in to me, and I read through the entire textbook, and I would use the dump truck as a way to, it's called a pre-trip inspection of the vehicle, and I would try to do that on the dump truck out there, and yeah, I was preparing for the CDL before I was even released.
With good behavior and the standards of the legal system, David is released on parole in the summer of 2023. Re-entry. After living over half of his life in one institution or another, this has to be scary. David takes the consequences seriously, though, and keeps on planning. He hears through a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy about a program in Wasilla called Second Chance. It's a long shot, but he decides to go for it. He talks to the IPO, the institutional probation officer. After a bit of a disconnect, David gets to apply. And to his surprise...
and sure enough, you know, the program called me at the prison from... they were on the streets and they were asking for clarification on you know, what my situation was. And just my initial conversation with them, I was so grateful. I was like, wow, thank you.
Second Chance is a program under the Mat-Su Reentry Coalition. It's coordinated through Valley Charities. Valley Charities has been a thing in the Valley since 1956. It oversees several programs, Second Chance just being one of them. It is through a Department of Labor's Second Chance Grant Fund. This is important because Alaska leads the nation in recidivism. 95% of all Alaska prisoners will be released at one time or another. 60% of them will find their way back. It's interesting to note that 15% of all those released prisoners resettle in the Mat-Su, which is where Second Chance comes in for David. And convicts supported in the six-month Second Chance program are two-thirds less likely to return to prison.
And it was, if it wasn't for just that conversation and that foundational relationship for somebody I know is going to support me to be successful in reentry, you know, I would have been all by myself. And literally I would have been by myself.
Second Chance's first order of support is housing. Then they go to things like helping people get driver's licenses, bank accounts, and then finally, maybe employment. But first, let's get settled.
They're big into meeting your needs more than anything else, making sure that you're going to be okay, literally even down to providing rides to your probation officer. They've helped out with finding places for you to lay your head down at night, make sure it's a safe place, and it's a place that's going to help you be successful in your parole or probation. They're really good into making sure that you have, warm clothing, you know, some tennis shoes.
They do things like help set up natural gas and electric accounts.
You know, somebody that gets out and has nothing, they will give you a foundation and stand by you and take your phone calls. In fact, I get a phone call once a week saying, you know, Mr. Anderson, I'm just checking in to see how you're doing. What can I do to help you be more successful? What do you need right now? I mean, that's, you know, when we first started talking about what the open door looks like. That's what the open door looks like. They are communicating, articulating, hey, what can we do? They're asking. They're really in a place of a service mentality. With the goal of trying to make sure that you're going to be successful in community.
If there is a difference between re-entry and having a second chance, it would be that re-entry is an event. But getting a second chance, that's different. That's like opening a door that was closed.
I think it's critical that as somebody that's stepping into society, we don't know what doors are open in community and what that even looks like. When you say the door is open, well, what's behind that door? And so, and it's hard to talk about being a convicted felon at all. It's so nerve-wracking for me to say that. I hardly at all, I can talk about it here with you today, but I would guess a lot of people don't even know. But it's not that I don't want to share. It's that I'm just so scared of how somebody might respond to me. I don't want to be rejected. And I think that the door being open, if somebody was a convicted felon and they've made the changes in their lives or they're looking to make the changes in their lives, that I'm opening this door. I'm receptive to hearing it with no judgment. And it would make it so much easier for people coming out of prison to trust and engage in that part of community.
David has found his second chance. For him, though, it might even be called a first chance. But he's now in a brand new, very weird world. It must feel like time travel. Consider this. He entered the Department of Corrections system in 2007, the year the first iPhone came out. Think about that for a moment. His last phone was a Razr.
No, you know, there is a... Sometimes I feel... disconnected I do, with all types of things, you know, whether it be learning to the phone or learning the internet. You know, I can't tell you how many times I fall for these scams. Like, I get emails and I'll go to a web page and I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to do this to sign up for this. Come to find out it was like a fake web page, like a similar web page to what I'm trying to do. And they asked me for my debit card number and I'm like, why are they? And then that, I don't, and so like, I'm like, I had to like get new debit cards and all kinds of stuff just because I fall for scams easily on the internet. I'm a little bit sharper with it now. Like, it won't happen again.
And then there's this.
You know, going to the grocery store and looking at varieties now. That's such a joy. I love going to the grocery store. I could be there for hours.
I know. I tried to understand it too.
And just to see the stuff that's in there now, whereas before everything is, you know, in prison, everything, you don't have much choices. It's just given to you and you can't buy a lot of things. I really don't like self-serve because I don't know how to work it too well. And I keep on, I see people going so quickly and then I always have to ask the clerk to come help me. So I actually strive, I go to the clerk more often than not. And it's funny, I find myself interacting, this happens to me, this probably happened to me 3 or 4 times now. I interact with the clerk in such a way that when I'm done, I'm always just so grateful for their help. So I thank them, say, man, you've been so helpful for this. And I couldn't have done this without you.
But no worries, I was glad to hear he doesn't give the clerk his debit card number.
Oh no, I'll swipe it through the thing. The chip on the debit cards, that's still new to me too.
David's release from prison and knowing his purpose and having a plan is like the end, or maybe it's the beginning of the hero's journey. Freedom is the ultimate reward.
You're gonna see a smile. You're gonna see joy. You know, you're gonna freedom, right? But here's the thing, you know, I got to keep the bigger picture in mind as well. Nobody's in the vehicle but me, and I'm just screaming, thank you, God. I can't believe this is a miracle. And I'm just, at the top of my lungs, is so joyful that I'm out, that I'm a free person, that I'm given an opportunity.
And that's what's called being the master of both worlds.
I'll listen. And I love to listen. I love hearing other people's stories. I love to find out what I can do to help them, you know, through their journey and help them reach goals that they're trying to set. Or if they're struggling with something, help them find some peace or hope. A lot of my social interactions are, you know, a complete contrast. I was very selfish, whereas now today I thrive to be selfless, you know, and I thrive to try to mimic the way Jesus Christ is.
David wants others to know that freedom includes expecting the unexpected.
Number one, you don't know what to expect. You need to be open-minded. You need to be receptive to feedback from others, and you need to be able to communicate with other people. Tell them that you need help with whatever it is. And I'm not necessarily referring to material things, although that is part of it, but I'm talking about emotional things, temptations, relationships, bad relationships. Relationships that are just, you know, they're unhealthy, and clearly you can tell it's an unhealthy relationship. But you also need to be able to do what I was saying earlier, discern who you can trust to speak into your life in that way. Because somebody might be telling you, oh, go do this, that, and the other. Go back to committing crimes. Or so now you need to be able to pick the right people, the right community.
Let's imagine that kindergartner in the photo one more time. Only this time, he's all grown up. He's traveled from the unknown and back again. He's got a fresh beard. He's got new glasses. His hair is freshly combed. And he's ready for the one thing. The one thing only a community can offer. And that's a second chance.
I think that's going to be, you know, after I'm in the process of trying to rebuild trust with the community. And then one day, maybe they'll allow me to do that.
David celebrated completing his CDL training through NIT last week. In the long run, he really wants to engage in some type of ministry. For now, he wants to find work, save money, and go back to school. Oh yeah, that job thing. I ask him about what he thinks when he's going to have to check the box on the application, the one where it asks if you've ever been convicted of a felon. What does he hope for?
I hope that they think that my past doesn't define me. It's not my identity today. And that they could see that if they gave me an opportunity, they might be able to see that I'm a, specifically for their work environment, I'm a competent person, and I'm willing to learn. And I'm also, when it comes to my character now, I'm also somebody that has experienced so much and seen so much and took a lot of initiative to change things. I'm very confident, you know, especially with my faith, that I have a wholesomeness in my life, which I think is a good thing to have in any work environment.
David tells me if he has one word to describe his re-entry, it would be hope. Hope for connections, for community, hope for that second chance, and maybe just a little grace. So if you're waiting for the light to change and next to you, you see a man cheering loudly in his car, don't worry, it's probably just David. That's what it looks like when you let go and just soak in the joy that comes with freedom.
You know, there's been plenty of times where I felt trapped and I had no voice. And that's all I ever wanted to do was be able to communicate how I, you know, how my heart is experiencing the world.
Those interested in helping with David's re-entry and second chance can contact Big Cabbage Radio. And those wanting to know more about the Second Chance program, Brian Galloway at reentry@valleycharities.org. And that's it for today's episode of Voices of the Mat-Su. If you have a story or know of someone who does, contact us at voices@bigcabbageradio.org. Until next time, it's been nice getting to know each other a little bit better. Special thanks to my family and the KVRF editorial board for their guidance and support. Thanks for listening. Stay good out there, Mat-Su.
This was Voices of the Mat-Su, sharing stories told by those who live in the Mat-Su borough. To revisit this and past stories, go to bigcabbageradio.org. This project is funded by a grant from the Mat-Su Health Foundation and is produced by Emily Forstner for Big Cabbage Radio. The views expressed in Voices of the Mat-Su do not represent the views of Big Cabbage Radio or the Mat-Su Health Foundation. Comments or questions about this show may be sent to voices@bigcabbageradio.org.